This is Wyman and Bob
on Seattle Sports Station, powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
We got Mean Text coming up at 4:45 today. We'll turn you over to, what do we got, the Pac-12 championship? Is that what's coming up? Pac-12 title game at 5 o'clock today. So we will be done at 5 o'clock. So Mean Text coming up at 4:45. We're hoping to catch up with our buddy DeMarco Farr here shortly. Just let us know when you got him there, Lefko. And we'll speak with DeMarco, get some more insight on the Rams, get his take on the University of Washington Huskies, as he is a Husky legend.
I'm more excited to talk Husky with him.
Yeah?
Because, and he'll remember this, and I think I brought it up with him before, but in 1991 or 1992, he came over to the Seahawk facility and came in there walking. I don't know who invited him. Maybe it was Cortez Kennedy or somebody like that. I just remember meeting him. I was going, man, this guy's got a lot of personality.
Yeah.
When I came out as a, and he wasn't even a rookie. I mean, he was still in college. But when I came out and I was a younger player, I was always kind of awkward and
quiet.
Real quiet. Would always look people in the eye and everything, but I just didn't want to say anything stupid. DeMarco was dealing, man.
He's not afraid of saying stupid things.
No, he was. You could tell, you know, he's one of those guys like Mark Schlereth and like Shannon Sharp, guys that I played with, where I'm like, okay, he's probably going to be in the media someday. And that's the impression you got with Marco. But just, you know, talk about Don James and, you know, Don James came and recruited me. You know, there was a few. Let's see, I'm the head coach from Stanford, Paul Wigan, and then I had Terry Donahue from UCLA. Mm-hmm. They all sat in my living room, 5465 Wildwood Drive in Reno, Nevada. And then Don James came down. And, you know, it was one of those, he made it like so difficult when I was getting recruited out of high school. It made it so difficult to tell those guys no.
Yeah.
Like eventually.
Now, did you get on the phone with them and call them, or did you? How does that process go?
Yeah, that's what I did. And actually, I was supposed to take trips to Nebraska and Oklahoma. And at one point, I was so, because you could take six trips, but I was so overwhelmed. It's my senior year. I'm trying to play basketball. I'm trying to get, you know, all my stuff done, my applications in and everything. So I called and I was like, I was honored to be recruited by Nebraska, and they told me I could play there and all that in Oklahoma, but, you know, it wasn't really realistic for me. I'm a West Coast guy. So, yeah. And then the other oddball one was Notre Dame, which I hated Notre Dame.
Who was was it Osborne, the head coach of Nebraska?
Tom Osborne. Oh, yeah. Like, coached for 40 years or something.
Yeah, legend.
Yeah. So, I called the guy in Nebraska, said, yeah, sorry, coach. I'm really sorry.
I'm not coming.
I'm not going to make the trip. I had to narrow it down. And here, you know, I'm a high school kid. I'm 17 years old. And he goes, well, you know what? We didn't think you could play anyway. And then hung the phone up on me.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Wow. Who was that?
That was the coach, whoever the recruiting coach was from Nebraska.
Wow.
And, you know, I'm just a kid. And I'm like, you know, so far, it's like everybody's been really nice to me, and we really want you here. And all of a sudden, it was like, and it was kind of the...
We didn't think you could play anyway. Oh, yeah? Then why are you recruiting me?
Yeah.
Why are you going to pay to fly
like
me out there?
I was just, like, speechless. You know, you're a kid, and you're dealing with adults. You expect the same,
mature,
you know,
behavior.
Yeah. So, it was kind of my little eye-opening wake-up call.
How did Oklahoma handle it?
Gosh, I don't.
They didn't hang up on
me. Maybe
you,
by
they?
That time I had my mom call or something. No, I don't remember.
Mom, you handle this one.
No, I think they didn't react that way. So, I mean, I was probably pretty low. I was, you know, I think Stanford, probably one of the top five recruits that they wanted there. But if I was, you know, going to Oklahoma, I would probably been 15 to 20 or 20 to 25 or whatever. So, yeah, I don't think that it was it really hurt them that much. But Nebraska,
you can play anyway. Wow.
Can you imagine? I'm thinking, oh, geez, how immature is that? But the guy was probably 30, 31, 32 years old. I suppose you should be a grown-up by then.
Yeah, what if something fell apart with Stanford? Who knows, you know, where you're just all of a sudden like, okay, that's off the table. I'm looking again.
The hardest guy for me to tell no was Gary Pinkle. Gary, do you remember him?
Yeah.
Gary Pinkle, super good-looking guy. He used to come and recruit me all the time. All the girls were like, ooh, who is that guy?
That's what made it hard to say no.
That was probably in his late 20s, no. But Gary Pinkle recruited my brother. And then when he was recruiting my brother, I was a young little sophomore kind of hanging around, and he would, you know, watch me play basketball every once in a while. And Gary Pinkel told me, I'm going to come back here in 2 years and recruit you. And that's exactly what he did. And Gary Pinkel had been roommates with Jack Lambert. So, all right, let's hear some stories from our guy, DeMarco Farr.
We finally got him nailed down. He's a man about town. He's got a lot on his plate.
I've been vamping here, DeMarco.
Yeah, DeMarco Farr is with us on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. How are you, my friend?
A man about town? Are you kidding me? I have a seven-year-old. A man about a house.
How are you?
I'm a man about the laundry. Come on.
Dave was just telling stories about when he was playing with the Seahawks, and you came over as a young guy playing for UW, and then right away he went, oh, yeah, this guy's got a job in the media when he wants. He's got personality.
Oh, really? You thought that back then?
Sure did.
No way.
Yeah.
I was like, scared to death because Cortez Kennedy and Joe Nash,
yeah.
Those two guys were scary. And then you guys had Keith Millard at the time.
Yes.
Who was an absolute, like, you know, psychotic guy.
Yes,
so, yeah,
he was.
But thank you for that. I didn't know that.
Yeah, no, I remember that. And, you know, I was just looking up how, you know, in that year in 91 and Don James, and I just want to tell you one quick Don James story because I know all the Husky fans here will love it. But I ran it. He recruited me. Him and Gary Pinkel was the coach that, you know, came and recruited me. But he came actually to my living room in Reno, Nevada. And so when I saw him, like maybe it was like 1998, Don James, I saw him at a golf tournament. And I kind of walked up to him, and he looks at me, and before I could even shake his hand, he goes, the last time I saw you was in your living room in Reno, Nevada. I'm like,
no
you
way.
Have got to be kidding me. That guy was special, DeMarco. He really was.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. You know, the practices were tough. They weren't, you know, over the top like Junction Boys, but they were tough. It was you had to be tough to get through that. But I think the coaching staff had it worse because Don James would run every day. He put those shorts on and those shoes and just go. And every coach had to follow him and run with him. And you knew some of those D-line coaches. Some of those O-line coaches like did not want to be out there, but they had to. It was awesome. So, yeah, I bet 100%. You know, he actually recruited my brother. I was a sophomore. I was 16, and my brother's 2 years older. So I used to listen to every coach that came in. My brother was a huge recruit. So the only one that stuck out to me was Don James because he was honest. You're going to come to UW, you're going to get better as an athlete, and you're going to graduate. Everybody else sold this guy a used car, sold my brother a used car. My mother saw right through it. But me, I said, in 2 years, you'll be back for me. And sure enough, he walked back in and said the same stuff and said, do you remember what you told me? And I signed that day. It was awesome.
That's great.
Wow. Well, we'll ask you some stuff about the Rams here in a moment, but what's your take on this Washington team this season, DeMarco? I mean, 10-2, and I've got an issue with the rankings. I mean, it's interesting because I think Utah was behind UW in the rankings before the Apple Cup. Then they both win. I think, who did Utah beat? Colorado or something? And somehow they're above them in the rankings, which I thought was really odd. But what's your take on the season for this team?
Well, you know, look, it's nice to be back in the national consciousness, back in the picture. I'm in Southern California, so you know, SC's got this place going wild right now, so it's nice to be back in the mix. I don't know what's going to happen with the Pac-12. I really don't. But from a Husky standpoint, it's nice to be talking about a football team that's actually winning and doing something. So I wish I could be more involved with the program. I wish I can go see more games. I hate the fact that I live in, you know, the kingdom of the Trojans right now, but we do flag our purple. We wear our UW stuff proudly down here in Southern California.
All right, DeMarco, so we would feel sorry for you covering a 3-8 team, but you won a Super Bowl last year, so you don't get any sympathy whatsoever from us. But but tell us what's going on, man. And Bob, I thought, put it perfectly that, you know, if there was three players you would take away, it would be Stafford, Kupp, and Donald. But, you know, that pretty unlucky in that regard as far as injuries go. But what else has kind of been going on there? How would you sum up the season that they're 3-8?
Well, this has been the worst luck I've ever seen one football team have. And that's not hyperbole. 11 games and 11 different starting offensive line groups. really. I mean, it's unbelievable what has happened to that offensive line. So, you know, that's it. No matter what you do, analytics, run the ball, throw the ball, no matter what you want to do, it starts and ends with your offensive line. So it's been really tough. When you consider calling a run play a waste of a play, you know how bad your offensive line is. So that's been the story here. So eventually it caught up with Matthew Stafford. He is no spring chicken. I still think he has elite arm talent, but any quarterback that gets hit that much, especially at that age, you're going to lose that guy. And sure enough, here we are. I think San Francisco put him in the tent. The next week they knocked him out of the game, and New Orleans did a job on him, and he's been out since. So that's been rough. Direct result of the offensive line. Cooper Kupp was everything. There might have been a bit of an overuse situation earlier in the season, but I think you had to because you couldn't run the football. Allen Robinson hasn't been what we thought he was going to be, so your only recourse to move the football was to throw it to Kupp. Eventually, he got hurt. Last season was a long season, and you're doing the same thing with him this year. Eventually, that was going to happen. So the AD thing, that's the one that really broke the camel's back. He's Superman. The guy has never missed a game due to injury, and here we are. So it just shows you how tough this season has been because of what's been going on up front on the offensive line. So that's rough. I agree with you. No one's going to have sympathy. You just won the Super Bowl, but it is what it is. It's rough. You're going to have to go out there with guys that you weren't really going to depend on coming out of training camp, but here you are. And you may see a lot of two quarterbacks with Wolford and Perkins. So no one thought of that, but you got to get through it the best you can.
Hey, as far as Donald goes, we were talking about it earlier that after on the heels of that Super Bowl win, DeMarco, he was talking about retirement and you know, that was a very big reality. And then he decides to come back for a season. Do you see him coming back again for another year? Like, okay, I can't end on a down note like this. I got to get one more and try to turn it around. Or what do you think his level of passion is for the game at this point?
Okay, see, I didn't want to be the guy to you know, like, blow his leverage. But Aaron wants to play. Aaron is a competitor. Aaron is about as competitive as Tom Brady. Tom Brady wants to break all the records. He wants to be the only name when you talk about quarterbacking in professional football. That's why he's still doing. Aaron's the same way. He's got numbers he's tracking down. So I knew he wanted to come back, but your leverage will never be higher than winning a Super Bowl and being considered the best player in the game. So he had a chance to stick him up for more money, and he did. You know, he threatened retirement, and they gave him what he wanted, what he deserved, and what he earned. So yeah, Aaron will be back. This is rough. This will be hard on him. But I think it's necessary because, look, how many more sacks do you think Aaron has? How many more years do you think he has at this level? Two, three at the most? Mm-hmm. The last thing I would want to do as a coach and as a franchise is waste that on a 3-8 football team that's probably going to end that way.
Yeah, it's remarkable, though, what kind of shape he's in. And, I mean, he plays one of the toughest. You know this, DeMarco. You just get the crap beat out of you. You're one big bruise at the end of the day. But, hey, how about, you know, it's funny. I was going to ask you about Bobby Wagner, but I thought, you know, look, Aaron Donald looks like
man,
a guy.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thank
but
you, Seattle. Yeah, yeah. Let me say that real quick to everybody. Thank you, Seattle, for messing that up and allowing us, the Rams, to get a player like that, because he's more than just an inside linebacker. I don't have to tell you guys that.
Yeah.
That guy's a leader.
Well, his leadership, yeah. And, you know, you couldn't ask for a better pro than Bobby Wagner. I mean, he's just the nicest guy, not nice guy on the field so much. But, yeah, how much I know J.P. Long was talking about him and gushing over him, and it sounds like he's carrying on there just like he did here.
Okay, look, it made me, like, lose faith in the media because they told me this guy had lost a step. And I'm like, I'll be damned if I see that step anywhere. And, like, how much of a leader he is. We talked about this, like, losing Andrew Whitworth was bigger than you realize. It's not just losing your left tackle. We didn't worry about right defensive ends during the Sean McVay era because of Andrew Whitworth. But what we miss most is his leadership. So Bobby Wagner stepped right into that void. Now, the problem is he's an inside linebacker, so that only goes so far. Left tackles are helping you score points, so that's a little bit different. But as far as leadership and being the barn boss, as in You could be messing around, having fun, yelling, screaming, doing what have you. When Bobby walks in, your demeanor changes. That, you know what I'm saying? He's that sort of guy, that sort of leader in the room. So, so happy to have him on this football team, because even though you're 3-8, it could be a whole lot worse if you didn't have a steadying influence like Bobby Wagner on your roster.
Well, and we asked this question earlier to J.B. Long, and I'm curious what your take is on it. And that is, you know, McVay, you read different articles, DeMarco, you know how it goes through a season when things aren't going well. The headline will read, you know, is this coach in trouble? Is this coach on the hot seat? But I was, I guess maybe I shouldn't have been surprised, but I was surprised to see something that came out. I think it was on Yahoo Sports about has McVay, you know, run his course in L.A. and all that. And I'm thinking, you just won a Super Bowl. How is that realistic? Does that make sense to you? Do you feel like there's any disconnect between what he does and what the team is doing, or that he's wearing thin out there at all?
Well, that's the downside of Los Angeles, isn't it? I mean, you just won a Super Bowl. Now they say you can't coach. That's the environment we're in. But he is having, what is that guy's name from Trading Places? Winthorpe? A Winthorpe moment. So a guy that's been super rich is all of a sudden super poor, and he's got to learn how to deal with it. So, look, he never planned to be here. No one, I don't think anybody in coaching has ever planned to be in this situation where you lost this many people this fast, regardless if you won a Super Bowl or not. So he's got to learn, and he's learning to live with this and find motivations to coaching outside of winning. He still wants to win. Don't get me wrong. Winning is the ultimate goal, but it's all about getting people better at this point. So it's really getting back to why you're coaching outside of winning championships, like the passion of getting guys better and seeing if you can make this group of guys on offense have success moving the football down the field and scoring points. Let's start there, and then you can stack those together. And if you do it enough, you might earn yourself a victory.
All right, DeMarco, back to your Husky days. I see that in the Super Bowl, the Rose Bowl that you guys won, you beat Michigan 34-14. A guy who's up here in Seattle, I'm not sure if you hang out with him much, Mario Bailey was offensive MVP. Steve Entman, defensive MVP. Probably should have been DeMarco Farr. But do you keep in touch with those guys, DeMarco? Is that a tight group?
You know what? Through Facebook, social media, phone calls, indirectly, absolutely. We are teammates for life, man. I still remember, I can still hear Mario Bailey's voice running down the hallway in a hotel in Los Angeles after we beat Michigan, saying we did it. We did it. Washington's number one. Like, we had talked about it ever since we lost to, I think we lost to UCLA in Husky Stadium when Brian Brown had the longest, quietest run in Husky history. He broke one for like 83. We lost a few, and then we lost our chance to win the national championship in 1990, and how we came together and agreed, we are not going to lose again, period, end of story. Ed Cunningham saying the same thing to me at the Rose Bowl. You're one of the guys we count on. We need you. We want to win the whole thing. So going from that day to beating Iowa in the Rose Bowl, and then beating Michigan the next year in the same spot, and the next day, Mario Bailey screaming, we did it, we did it. I will never forget that. So absolutely, we're teammates for life.
That's awesome.
By the way, you think Penix comes back next year?
You know, what's his pro chances? I like the kid. If Kyler Murray can be that guy, then the NFL's changed. What do you think are his pro chances? I hope he comes back.
It's hard to tell. I mean, he looks phenomenal at this level, but you know how it goes. That next step is different for everybody. So he looks to have the tools and the arm and decision-making and all that, but we are watching him against college kids versus pros. So I haven't really heard what he's, you know, you always hear the speculation from the analysts. Oh, he's a first rounder. He's a second rounder, whatever. I haven't heard that yet.
You know what? I'll tell you what, like I said, I'm down here in Trojan land and I can't stand it. That quarterback they have is exciting. So I would love to see those two face off, like, again and again and again. That would be great and put on a show.
Well, DeMarco, what do you think about the game on Sunday? We've been talking this week about how it seems like no matter how good or bad the Rams are, it's always kind of a tough matchup for the Seahawks. There's been some times that they've just kind of snuck up on the Seahawks and taken them down. What do you think the final score on Sunday?
Andy Reid is an awesome coach. He gets it. He's smart. That's high-level offense. Patrick Mahomes, when he's playing like that, forget it. And Travis Kelce. And this was all the people pointing to Jalen Ramsey getting beat by Travis Kelce. I'm like, do you guys watch ball? Did you see what Mahomes was doing? He negated the rush. And then you got to guard Kelce by yourself. So anyway, but I think that Andy Reid took his foot off the gas towards the end of the game. He could have run it up. He tried to run it in instead of throw it in to get more points. I do not think Pete Carroll is going to be that sort of coach. If the Rams get in a situation where it's not going well offensively and the Seattle Seahawks get their running game going and they start punishing a defense that doesn't have Aaron Donald, I don't think Pete is going to take his foot off the gas. So this could be punishing. But there is a pathway to beat every football team, no matter what your roster looks like. It starts with not turning the ball over. That's number one. So if Rams can do that and keep possession and play good special teams and not have mistakes there and give yourself a chance, take this game into the fourth quarter, they're always going to be dogfights. But eventually, I think the way the roster is now for the Rams, the Seahawks have the advantage. They should be favored. But that doesn't guarantee you're going to win on game day. So we'll see. We'll see what the offensive line looks like. We'll see what the two quarterback system looks like. We'll see what the defense looks like without Aaron Donald. But I'll tell you this, Sean McVay wants to win. He's not backing off that one iota. We'll see what that does to his play calling on game day with the lack of his stars being out there with him.
DeMarco, good to hear your voice, my friend. We appreciate you taking the time, and we'll see you when you come out here in January.
Absolutely. Yeah. I heard we may get moved to Saturday. Dinner on you.
Yeah, we'll talk about that. We'll talk about that.
No doubt.
We appreciate it, man.
All right.
Thanks, DeMarco.
There you go. There's DeMarco Farr. Always good to catch up with him. Husky legend and a Super Bowl champion with the then St. Louis Rams. I think he actually started when they were in Anaheim. When they were playing in Anaheim.
Did he? Wow.
I think that was when he started.
I was looking at those Husky years. I mean, they win the Rose Bowl the year before, and then because they must have gone on, what, like a 15-game win streak there.
Yeah.
Incredible.
It is Friday, which means it's a Snoqualmie Casino Sportsbook Football Friday right here on Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app. Coming up, our hot stove hype continues to end with a look at the Red Sox and some of the players available on that team. Pete Abraham will join us next year with Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports Station on 710.
It's time for the Hot Stove Hype, taking a look at the free agents around baseball every day on Wyman and Bob.
We've been doing it every day, going city to city, looking at some of the free agents, some of the trade possibilities in different markets that may help out this Seattle Mariners team. And we end things in Boston. Joining us now on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline, Red Sox beat writer for the Boston Globe, Pete Abraham, is with us. Pete, how are you, sir?
Guys, how are you?
We're doing good. We're doing good. We've been talking to people in different cities about, you know, players that are available. And obviously in Boston, one of the bigger names that's available out there is Xander Bogaerts. First of all, is there any feeling that he's going to stay in Boston, or do you feel like that relationship's done?
Well, there was a feeling for a long time that he would stay in Boston. The Red Sox, right after the season ended, made it a point to say, you know, he's our top priority. This is the guy we want to keep. We're going to do everything we have to do to keep him. And it's been, you know, 2 months now, and they haven't done it. So the longer it goes, the more you wonder if they're actually going to do that, or was that just a lot of hype, and they were trying to get themselves cover in case he didn't come back, and they could at least say, well, you know, he was our priority, but he decided to go somewhere else. But it's still, when you talk to executives around the game, they still feel like the Red Sox will be the team that ends up signing him. But until that happens, there's a lot of doubt in New England about it.
What about the kind of teammate and clubhouse guy that Xander Bogaerts is? Having covered him, what kind of guy are we getting? We're going to sign him for sure.
I've covered the big leagues for 22 years, and I can honestly say he's one of the top two or three guys I've been around in terms of that. He's somebody in a market like Boston where it's hard to do. He's been in the big leagues since 2013, and he's never once been involved in any sort of the remotest bit of controversy, or, you know, said the wrong thing after the game, or got into a scrap with a teammate. There's never been anything like that the entire time he's been in Boston. He's a guy who shows up early. He plays hard. He plays every day unless he's really hurt. He's played a lot of times when I know he's been hurt, and he just wanted to stay in the lineup. Never complains about anything. Hits in the middle of the order and produces and has two championship rings. He's everything you would want in a player. Endlessly polite guy, a family guy who goes back to Aruba to be with his family after the season. You know, I can't imagine there's any team out there that would that wouldn't want to have him, because he's shown under tough circumstances, you know, how to, what a successful player he is at a premium position.
As far as his power numbers go, what did anything change for him last year in terms of approach? Because you look at previous seasons, he hit 33 home runs back in 2019. He hit over 23 different times, and then last year just 15. So a little bit down from what we've seen him do in the past.
Yeah, I think that was the case for a lot of players around the league. And if you talk to players, they seem to feel like MLB did something with the ball different than they had done in previous years, and that a lot of guys went down in power. Obviously, not Aaron Judge, but there were a lot of players who – and that happened with the Red Sox quite a bit. J.D. Martinez had one of his worst seasons in terms of home runs. Rafael Devers didn't hit as many home runs as he normally did. The Sox felt like the ball wasn't going out to right center as well as it normally had there, because – they had built a structure behind the bleachers that, that changed the wind directions. So the players had a lot of theories about it, but yeah, they all didn't seem to hit well in terms of power. But Xander's a guy, I think, you know, whether it's the ball or not, you know, that probably was an anomaly, because he's always been a pretty good doubles hitter and a pretty good home run hitter.
Looks like J.D. Martinez, also a free agent. Do you expect he's going to move on as well?
Yeah, I think so. It feels like his time in Boston has come to an end, and not so much, I think, with any sort of acrimony. It's just that with Chaim Bloom running the Red Sox baseball operations, they put a lot of value on versatility, and it's hard to see them having a guy who's pretty much just a DH who would probably require $18 or $19 million a year to sign on their roster. I think he would prefer somebody who can play some positions, maybe rotate the DH around like a lot of teams do these days, and not be tied into one guy who's the only the DH. So I would be surprised if he were to come back unless it was in a very agreeable financial situation. But JD, I suspect, is going to go somewhere and make a team very happy, because he had what in his mind was a down season last year, even though he was an all-star. And he's the kind of guy who's going to go back to Miami in the offseason, spend a lot of time in the cage, try to figure out what went wrong, and come back and have a good season.
Do you see any step back in his game? I mean, he's a guy who's going to be 36 next year in August, so he's not in his athletic prime anymore. Do you see anything that tells you, yeah, the bat speed's not what it was, or defensively, anything that's going on with him?
Yeah, it was. He had a very strange season. I think he was first or second in the American League in doubles, and just didn't hit a lot of home runs. And last year was the first time in his career he didn't play in the field at all. They never put him in left field. They stayed away from that the entire season. Now, part of that was they had a pretty decent number of outfielders, but they also felt like in the past when they had put him in the outfield, even if it was just for a day or two, his back would act up or his hamstrings would act up, and they just wanted to avoid that as best they could. And he got a ton of at-bats as a DH. He was in a lineup, you know, most every day as a DH. But I think at this stage, he would probably need to go to a team that could afford to just let him DH and do his thing. And I don't know that he would succeed as so much as if you said to him, hey, we need you to play the outfield 2 days a week, or we need you to think about playing first base or something like that. I think he needs to go to a lineup where they could just plug him in, hitting fourth or fifth, and let him DH.
Hey, Pete, a couple questions. One, do you think Aaron Judge, being in your division, is he going to be possibly, do you think he's going to move on? And then the other one is just how much – Is the rivalry between the Red Sox and the Yankees very much alive? How is that that whole love-hate relationship?
You know, it's funny. I'll answer the second one first. The Red Sox have a more bitter relationship with the Tampa Bay Rays than they do with the Yankees. Mm-hmm. Their relationship with the Yankees is pretty cheery. You know, the players get along, the managers get along. There hasn't been like a, you know, any sort of fight or bad feelings in the longest time. And every time they play the Rays, it seems like it's a chippy game. There's guys throwing at each other and yelling at each other on the field. But with the Yankees, that hasn't been the case in a while. So I know as a guy who covers the Red Sox, I would love to see a Red Sox-Yankees brawl. That's good for business, but we haven't had that in a long time. So that's been a little strange. And in terms of Aaron Judge, we go to Yankee Stadium 9 or 10 times a year, and I was there for the playoffs too. If you walk around the concourse at Yankee Stadium, and I'm being honest about this, 3 out of every 4 people you see are wearing an Aaron Judge jersey. And that's men, women, children, you name it. Everybody's got an Aaron Judge jersey on. And they got literally lines of people waiting to buy Aaron Judge jerseys. he is a huge part of their marketing plan, of their business plan. And I think whatever any other team would offer him, the Yankees would offer him more to keep him. And I also feel like Judge understands that long term, if you're a career Yankee and you have that aura about you that, you know, whether it's Jeter or Posada, guys like that, that's going to benefit you long after you're done playing baseball. You're always going to have economic advantages to doing that. You'll be able to come back to the stadium. And, you know, there's a lot of things that'll fall your way if you're a lifetime Yankee. And I suspect he appreciates that. He came up in the organization. He always speaks very highly about New York and the fans and everything else. I think in the end, he'll end up staying with the Yankees, and he's going to get a ton of dough. I mean, they've already offered him $300 over 8 years, so he'll probably get over that. So I think, you know, for that kind of money for a guy who's already 30, I think it's going to be really hard to turn down.
Hey, Pete, last one before we let you go, just speaking of deals, what kind of deal do you think Xander Bogaerts is looking at?
You know, he's older than, you know, say, Dansby Swanson and those guys, so it's probably not going to be a, you know, 8 or 10 year deal, something like that. And I think it's also sort of recognized that in time he's going to have to move off shortstop. But I do think he's going to get 6 years, $25-26 million a year, somewhere in that neighborhood, because of his track record and because he showed a lot of defensive improvement last year. And it's not, you know, it's hard to find a shortstop who's a good hitter and a team leader and a guy who's had a ton of playoff experience. And a guy you know you're not going to have to worry about. He's going to show up. He's going to work hard. He's going to play every day. If you're the manager, there's so much value in that, having a guy that you can rely on. He's, whether it's the Red Sox or the Giants or the Dodgers or, you know, whatever ends up happening with those shortstops, he's going to do just fine wherever he ends up.
Pete, thanks so much for taking the time out with us. We really appreciate it, and have a great weekend.
Thanks, I appreciate it.
Thanks, Pete.
There you go. Pete Abraham, Red Sox beat writer for the Boston Globe, shedding a little light on what's going on with a couple of players on that roster. Meanwhile, it is Friday, which means it's a Snoqualmie Casino Sportsbook Football Friday on Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app. All right, it's your last chance to get them in. Get the shows, get the mean text into the show. You got a few minutes here. 866-979-3776, powered by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. Your mean text coming up next with Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports Station on 710.
Wyman and Bob.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports Station.
It's how we end the show each and every week. We're going to be turning you over to the Pac-12 title game here at the top of the hour. So we get the mean text in right now at 866-979-3776, powered by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. Some of these, Dave and I, if Dave and I are having to put our heads together to figure out exactly where the joke is in it, it's probably not going to go over well.
Yeah, Adam Ray included. Adam, you're not making sense. No, he's... I don't know. It was. I'm just. I figure if I don't laugh when Adam says something, then it's me. It's on me.
You didn't like his one.
That one was him.
Lefko and the Lefko has the face of a man who yells at kids who sell Girl Scout cookies outside of his favorite grocery store.
That's true. I think
you do yell at
you
them.
You yell, get out of here.
Yeah. There was a shot at Adam Ray. Actually, someone had.
Did they?
Yeah. So after you guys had Nick Ballore on, everyone was raving about Nick Ballore, and 360 said, Nick was awesome. He's hilarious. Now you can dump Adam Ray. You don't need him for comic relief.
Oh, see.
Come on now.
Nick is funny, but come on. Now. Funny. Now you're being silly.
Actually, a couple of texts did come in saying those two should do a podcast.
They should do it together. Yeah.
A Nick Ballore, Adam Ray podcast. That would be good.
I thought his shot at Salk was pretty good.
Oh, go ahead.
He said, Salk is the Three Musketeers of sports talk show hosts. If Kit Kat and Snickers aren't on the shelf, you do a lap around the chip aisle, then come back and begrudgingly grab one, but halfway through eating it, you give it to your cat. Just casting Salk aside.
Do cats eat candy bars?
I don't know. I guess you wouldn't give it to a dog, though. You know that's bad with the chocolate. I don't know about cats.
I think Adam would tell me right now that I'm a comedy killer.
You're explaining away the funny.
Wait, do cats even eat musketeer bar?
You're looking for a flaw in the premise.
Way too literal.
Yeah. What about the musketeer bar? You guys were having a little debate there.
I don't like them.
I don't want to get us bogged down in this, but I love them.
Bob was pretty passionate about it, and so were you on the other side.
Well, he talks about peanuts getting in the way.
Like, yes. Give me chocolate and more chocolate.
Peanuts getting in the way. Too healthy for you?
Yeah.
Snickers is outstanding.
Uninterrupted. or chocolate and nougat uninterrupted?
I'm out on the Three Musketeers.
Here's an important question for Wyman. First of all, do you know the premise of the Cocaine Bear?
I don't.
Oh, we need to show him that trailer. You saw the trailer, right?
Yeah.
The Cocaine Bear. So there's a movie coming out about a bear that's literally on cocaine. And 206 used that to say, Wyman probably thinks he's tougher than the Cocaine Bear, but in reality, he couldn't even fight a teddy bear.
here's one about my Thanksgiving sandwich, which I do. Sometimes I will write messages in mustard on my bread
and
send them to people. Yeah.
Of course you do.
Next year, I'm going to send, hi, Bob.
Write it out in mustard.
Dave gets so excited about his leftover Thanksgiving sandwich, he probably calls up Bob and excitedly says, Bob, I'm eating my favorite Sandy.
At which point, Bob would hang up.
Like chicken tendies?
Ugh.
My favorite Sandy, Bob.
Don't do that, Dave.
This is a 509 that listens to the show.
Yeah, be better than that, Dave.
We appreciate you, 509.
The 425 said, Wyman finds Bob so intolerable and annoying, he doesn't even bother telling him when they're in the same room attending the same press conference. Yeah, we found out we were in the same Pete Carroll press conference room, and I guess you were standing in the back. Right?
What?
Is that where you were?
Oh, yeah, that's right.
You said it.
I was back there waiting for my x-ray.
Were you confused about that mean text there?
Yeah, I was. I forgot about that. Well, I wasn't listening to Pete because I was about to die up in the booth, and I was trying to get my ribs x-rayed. So that's why I wasn't there for the press conference. Like Mark Canna's face before him, Lefko takes the punchability to the vocal cords. Does that make any sense at all, Carter?
He doesn't like my voice, I guess.
Okay.
Is that a shot?
Bottom line, it's a shot.
Vocal cord.
It's a shot at Lefko's voice. Yeah. Okay.
360 says, you're all a bunch of Joe Schmageggies.
Oh. Taking Bob's name.
Yeah. Wow. Let's see.
When was the first time, Bob, that you broke out the Joe Schmageggy? Where'd you get that? Like from? It sounds like something from your dad.
I don't know where I got
your
that from.
Your dad or your uncle? Joe Blow.
Yeah, I honestly can't remember where or when that came up. I didn't create it, but I can't tell you where I got it from.
My dad used to call people like that schmoes. He's a schmo.
Well, do we read the one about you from Adam Ray? Is that appropriate?
Go ahead and read it.
Bob has the face of a guy who bragged about his girls in high school having extra leg meat.
Extra leg meat.
I bragged about the girls having extra leg meat. Or
I think it was supposed to say to the girls. I think you bragged to the girls.
I thought it bragged about.
You want to go to prom with me? I got extra leg meat.
Oh, well, either way.
What does that mean?
I know.
Let's see. Bob is to Wyman as Jake Heaps is to Russell Wilson. Left a comfortable gig to work with a weird, cocky underachiever. Wait, who am I in this role?
Which one is that?
It's funny, but I'm not sure who's who in that one.
I think I'm to you as Jake is to Russell, so I guess I'm Jake in this scenario. And you're Russell, the weird, cocky underachiever.
Okay.
At least that's how it reads here, but whatever.
Jen and Beaverton just took a big shot at me. Ouch.
Go get him,
Mike likes
Jen.
Three Musketeers because they're just like him, monochromatic and bland.
Yeah.
Ooh. Ooh, goodness.
They have flavor. They're good.
They have flavor.
They have taste.
Didn't somebody go after Fred in Birch Bay?
Was Texter on Texter Crime.
Yeah, that was yesterday. They sent some. Do you have that one? Somebody said, I'll
it was like
paraphrase.
Don't get me started with, well, they said Frank and you corrected them.
Well, they said, I unleash me on the texters. Yeah. I'll come in with the storm of El Hombre and the twisted wit of Adam Ray. And I'm starting with, and he called him Frank in Birch Bay, and I corrected him. So it's Fred.
It's Fred, for God's sake.
Yeah.
Somebody was accusing you and I, Bob, of being the Kirkland signature of sports radio.
I was about to read that.
Okay, go ahead.
206, you two are the Kirkland signature of sports radio. I don't even have to check the video to know that your clothes are all sponsored by Costco, Dave.
You know, it's funny, I do have Costco things.
So Dave's wearing the Costco thing, but we're both Kirkland signature.
I don't have a single thing on right now.
Or maybe you're both. Costco. Maybe he's saying you're both sponsored by Costco. Is your wardrobe Costco today, Bob?
Oh, you know what? I stand corrected. My socks. Puma socks.
By Costco.
I got those too.
Costco.
Yeah, I'm wearing Costco socks.
He's right.
Are they the Puma ones, Bob?
Yep.
Yeah, comfy.
He or she, 206 is correct. Yeah. You two are the
nailed
signature.
They nailed us. Mm. Yeah. We got Costco socks.
They can't even see our socks. Boy, I almost said something wrong there.
Careful.
Should we end with... This one might actually hurt. Should we end with a mean one here?
Yeah.
Sure.
So when you guys were talking about Daryl Taylor running onto the field too early, that was wild. But 360 says...
The stamp band play. You know what? I have to say, before we sign off, that play by Daryl Taylor, I've never seen anything like that before in my life. Ever?
I've
got the plays going, and then he tried to go out there and throw a block.
Well, there's a lot of people didn't even see it. Obviously, the refs didn't see it. I didn't notice it till Lefko showed me the video.
Tell you, man, it's got to be a strategy. You got to work it in every game, once a game, get an extra blocker out there.
That does it for us. We got the Pac-12 title game coming up next. Want to thank our guest today, Nick Ballore, who was hilarious, JB Long, Todd Rosiak, DeMarco Farr, Pete Abraham, all joining us on the program. If you missed any of that, that's a lot to miss. So head to the podcast page at seattlesports.com, click the podcast tab, and click on our picture. And what's the next step, Lefko?
Subscribe.
That's right. That's right. Click subscribe. Have a great weekend, everybody. Stay safe out there. We will talk to you on Monday right here with Wyman and Bob, Seattle Sports Station on 710.